We have two special guests here today, David Powell and Michael Brewer. David's an accomplished author. David is also an expert on trauma incident reduction, and he's wrote a long book about that. And we certainly welcome both these former Marines, combat vets, both. So let's begin, please, with a nice warm welcome for Michael Brewer and David Powell.
David and I had a real serendipitous meeting in that we were at a Catholic retreat in Regina, Clary, held by Father Phil Saloy, who's the national chaplain of the VBA. So David and I met at this retreat, and just like good Marines and all that Semper Fi stuff, we hit it off right away. He obviously has been down the path, and that's all I got to say to kick it off. He's published. I'm Irish. David, he's not only been published, but he's been interviewed by important people, including the Pentagon Channel. And we thought that you would enjoy watching a clip from his interview to start things up.
Thank you. Thanks all for having me. We're going to play a little bit of an interview I gave to a television channel called Healthline, and it discusses the topic that both Mike and I are quite fired about, even more so from a personal perspective. It was an author's interest that drove me to write this book. There's more about it. I'll run my mouth about this later. I wrote that book as a shout to the public that PTSD casualties need help, and they need help now. That's from a PTSD sufferer from 1967 who waited until July 2006 to get angry enough to put it on paper. That resulted in these interviews. That's my introduction to that. Thanks.
Welcome to this edition of Healthline. I'm Dr. Kevin Soden. In the Civil War, it was known as Soldier's Heart. In World War I, shell shock. In World War II, combat fatigue. These days, it's known as post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD. It's a condition that veterans have been dealing with for generations, but only recently started talking about. Post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD, involves not just remembering, but the re-experiencing of old traumas in the form of nightmares and flashbacks. It's often accompanied by anxiety and depression. Left untreated, PTSD can destroy lives. But for many veterans, the condition is something they're ashamed of and keep secret. In 1967, former Marine and PTSD sufferer David Powell returned to a world that vilified the service. Unlike so many veterans, David did seek help 20 years later.
After I killed the first person, and as of this morning, every day I have said the Lord's Prayer in my hopes that it will outweigh the bad when it's my time to meet my Maker.
It's been decades since David Powell returned home from combat in Vietnam. You probably can't tell by looking at him, but David is listed by Veterans Affairs as 100% disabled. His wounds are not on the surface. David suffers from post-traumatic stress disorder.
My first symptoms were wanting to be alone and aloof. And there was a feeling that I should keep to myself because it was dangerous to make friends. In the war, you could lose a friend. And I didn't want to suffer that pain.
Fighting in Vietnam was never part of David's plan. He was 26 and married, with a successful career as a computer programmer when he received a draft notice.
I was an adult. I wasn't 18 to 20 with no vocation in sight, no family responsibility.
David decided to enlist in the Marines to get the inevitable over quickly. Within weeks, David found himself behind an M16 rifle and a rocket launcher.
When I get ready to fire my rifle at somebody, to hit them at least and kill them if I could. It was so exhilarating, I don't think they will ever find a chemical to find that mind. That is followed immediately, for me, total remorse, because I had just ended someone's life on the planet, and I so regretted it. I had a mantra that I was doing what I was doing to save my life, to save my comrade's life, to take the lives of our enemies, and I was going to return home and be welcomed as a patriot.
David had performed remarkably. He was awarded the Purple Heart and 7 other medals in appreciation of his service.
I was supposed to come back after this 2 years away and pick up right where I left and go home. For people who remember the year 1968 in the United States, it was a dangerous thing to have been a serviceman. Worse if you were in combat. Worse if you'd done some of the things I'd done. So I hid it.
Not only did he hide his medals, David tried to hide the fact that he had fought at all.
I was a former Marine who was in combat, who had done things that you don't do, such as take life, limb, burn down dwellings where people ruin the water supply that they depended on, and so on. And no one to turn to. So suck it up, you're different. And get over it.
David did his best to adjust and forget the horror of Vietnam, but memories of battle continued to haunt him in ways he never could have imagined.
In San Francisco, I walked to work in the financial district. A car backfired while I was on my lunch hour. I found myself in the curb in my suit, laying prone in front of probably 300 people. That was immediately followed by shame. And instead of going back to work, I went to my apartment, turned off the lights, and stayed there for 18, 20 hours. That happened 3 times.
He couldn't control his anger. And as a Marine,
I've watched David's interviews about 3 or 4 times because, like, after we first met, I was just convinced that he's so much more articulate about finding the adjectives for the radioactivity, as Ben Jennings used to call it. You have to just let the radioactivity out. Unfortunately, it was our wives that mostly picked up the radioactivity over time.
Thank you all for coming. The subtitle of the session is From the Horse. I coined that spasmatically when I was talking to Mike about this group and said, really, it's from the horse's mouth that we're talking. We're both combat experienced. We're both Vietnam PTSD casualties. I hold the belief that recovery is for eternity, not just for a specific diagnosis that says, you're okay now, David. So, tongue-in-cheek, we got the title. I'm only a horse in the herd of the walking wounded. I'm a little upset because yesterday or the day before, I saw in the newspaper this statistic. Over 61,000 Vietnam veterans have committed suicide now. That's more names than there are on the wall, the Vietnam Memorial. We've got to cry out, Mike and I, and hopefully you guys, it's time to take action. Let's not accept the definition of post-traumatic stress. Let's do something about it. Like Smedley Butler said, as Mike just read, they knew about it in 1936. They knew they'd thrown away the combat veteran, the traumatized nurse, the pilot that knew his bombs killed people. They threw them away after their service. Mentioned before, that's why I wrote my book. It is a tale about me and my descent into hell and my recovery. 208 pages, and it took me 2 years to write it. It was very cathartic. The momentum to write it was when I saw Afghan and Iraq veterans coming home to handshake, not hugs. Post-traumatic stress casualty survivors would rather die than admit their hurt. You can't see an internal mental wound. And if they are brave, they're not going to give it up. They're going to suck it in, like I said on the interview. Shut up and move on. It seemed the safer one. Safer action to do, but no. There is now, in my mind, a call to action. Let's get off the dime, reach out. When it finally occurred to me that the occurrence happened to be a personal tragedy where I lost a lover, not by death, but by a younger beau, and I felt in total despair. So I told myself, I've got to pierce this veil. But in 1986, I didn't even know about PTSD. It was virtually undiscussed. It was diagnosed by the Psychiatric Association in 1980, but that gave verbiage to the illness or disorder, not anything to the care of COVID. Nonetheless, I turned to the VA for help. And God love them, in 1986, they knew they had to care, but they didn't know how to care. One of their attempts that I experienced was given to me this way. Vet counselor and employee in Menlo Park said, we're forming a rap group of combat experienced Vietnam vets. There'll be 11 of you guys in the room, and we're going to call it a rap group. You're just going to sit, and one by one, over the course of time, you're going to bring up your traumatic experiences and talk about them. Then the whole group will help you cope and understand and move on, put it in the past. My experience was that when I recounted one of my traumatic experiences, which there are a few, I'm 100% rated permanent in nature. After I finished telling my little tale, I was weeping, I was shaking, I was full of guilt and remorse. The rap group sat in silence. The clock ticked its full hour, and I was sent home every Thursday night for a year and a half. I came close to dying or killing myself in my car on the way home. I put up with that for 16 months. I said enough. That was my rap group experience. I wasn't better. I didn't feel any change other than my Vietnam experiences had been refreshed to a point of total recall, which was exactly the same condition I was in 1967. Now I'm in 1988, still spinning. The VA steps in again, says, okay, we know you don't like the rap group or it doesn't seem to work for you. We're going to put you into individual one-on-one counseling. I did that for years. My experiences were that they were all centered around cognitive behavioral therapy, or CBT. My summation of that is, what you're suffering from happened in 1966 and 1967. Right, David?
Right.
This is the here and now. This is 1988, 89. Today's problems you need to work on. Forget the past. That just didn't cut the mustard for me. During my VA work, and a lot on my own, I tried self-medication. It worked very good for me in several ways. It numbed the memories. It helped me go to sleep at night. In fact, I passed out every night. The purpose of that for me was I would not have the nightmares. I wouldn't wake up with evening sweats. I wouldn't be back in Nam at 3:30 in the morning. The downside of that was being arrested 3 different times for driving my vehicle, Tulsi. That also carries along with it a lot of financial burden in the way of raised insurance costs, court fines, and so on. So, I gave that up. I'm very proud of the fact that I never went into this world. I've never used a controlled or illegal substance. I have used VA prescribed medication to some modicum of success. My realization came when I overheard a talk from a friend to another friend about traumatic incident reduction. I'm not pitching TIR, I'm just telling you about it. It is a one-on-one way to sit in a room and do what the rap group was purported to do, and that was resolve it, get fully understood, and let it go or put it away.
I do remember the first time I met Bill, I asked him why Bill was a lieutenant, a platoon commander in Vietnam. And I asked him why officers don't join the legions of VFWs. Well, not at the rate that enlisted guys do. And being the poet writer that he is, he said something very lovely. He said, our guilt's a little different. We had to ask you to do it. And that's the kind of guy Bill is. So I'd like, if there's a chance, to hear piece of his poetry at the end. Like wounded souls, as David says, not unlike St. Francis of Assisi upon his return from the Crusades, and his combat buddy Bernardo, they were all rich guys from Assisi, and it was St. Francis, by the way, who said, free at last, Martin Luther King stole it from him years later when he threw all of his father's clothes off the balcony. I would say these were sort of an original Semper Fi, the original band of brothers, maybe even the second organized group of veterans, the first one being Peter, Andrew, James, John, Matthew, Philip. Isn't it interesting that 12 apostles, the same number in the squad? This poet warrior, St. Francis, who praised the sun and the moon, often hid in a dark cavern and referenced his brother Wolf, I call that PTSD, and his nightmarish behavior, and his brother Ass, his life of debauchery and lust and life of leisure, so as to learn not a spirit of ascent, but one of acceptance of himself as a way out of the bottomless abyss of war. It was St. Francis of Assisi that first demonstrated to me a path out of the abyss. His confabulated personas could be easily considered as early psychodrama. No one ever doubted that St. Francis had courage of heart, even the most manly and military sort. The same brand of courage that led me to the vet center and ultimately to the EBTU unit here at the VA, as they say you have to take off your mask. And when you live in a city and you know a lot of the staff at the VA, it was pretty interesting to walk around with a white armband on. So that I could address my brother Ass and my brother Wolf. As I said earlier, there's a different sort of seminary here. In this inward journey, it is this inward journey that leads many a veteran of war to a vision quest of sorts. What lies behind us and what lies before us are tiny matters to what lies within us, Emerson said. In the spiritus mundus, the spiritual realm, if you will, there is a database that fuels the desire to transcend the demon spirit that seems to have kidnapped us, that seems to have been kidnapped by the war. The thrust and the fruit of this quest is the accidental shucking of the ego, the very game of most all spiritual and religious journeys. Some say ego stands for easing God out. To seek the energy behind each and every thought, to look for the energy, what makes me think and feel this way. For us, the trigger that triggers the trigger, or the sponsoring thought to some, the shadow to the unions, can be likened to St. John of the Cross's dark night of the soul, or the passage through despair, which lies beneath depression, as Kierkegaard wrote, or Tolstoy's Ivan Illich, who learned too late in life that he had not led the life he ought to have, or Friedrich Nietzsche's notion that man must kill God to be man. Many of us were convinced that Vietnam killed God and left no man behind. Yet as Soren Kierkegaard went on to elaborate in his essay, Fear and Trembling, there is truth in the old tag about genius and madness being closely allied. So long as we have the sense to see that the genius is a genius because in spite of everything, he keeps his sanity. It is not the narrowness of the margins of our symptoms, sometimes just even today. When we were setting up, I had to say to myself, the camera and everything, is this going to come about? Didn't know if the TV would be here in time. I go in the bathroom and I say, this is not Operation Meat River. I'm not losing my ammo. The TV will be here. In the narrowness of the margins of our symptoms that matter, it's not the narrowness that matters, but the brilliant exploitation of what lies within it that counts. It is in our weakness that we come to our full strength. I would read that passage, but it's 2 Corinthians 12. It's very powerful. In our weakness, we come to our full strength. Should a man admit he is a bit crazy, let's not imagine that he admits he is also stupid. Were we to learn to not patronize the veteran with PTSD, we may receive more wisdom than we bargained for. The veterans of war, from the Peloponnesian Wars, through Iwo Jima, to the Nam, to Tikrit, they have a deep reservoir of lore and insight that does not surface in polite society. Just Google all the quotes of von Clausewitz and you'll see what is not said in polite society. It is possible that the dalliance between the higher and lower states of consciousness in the PTSD bed, who has danced with his demons, hugged his shadow, and survived the anguish of the soul, has created a being with an attraction pattern that can bond with others and lead them and the community out of the abyss and the spiritual ravages of war. We've come to learn by the way of the overlapping of physics and metaphysics that existence has no locality and that there is a cellular knowledge that is the essential nature of all universal energy. I choose to liken this to the Holy Spirit. Do not ask me why or how, but the human brain at its primal level, lizard brain as the warrior calls it, when it is fused and drenched in the symptoms of PTS, has a sub-rational wisdom that is occasionally a passport to the unbidden life of that spiritual energy field that seems to know more than it knows it knows. That's Romans 9:26. I'm going to try to say that time here. Romans 9:26. When there, in that field, there's a spiritual harvest awaiting to cleanse the dark night of the soul. It is a world beyond concept or therapeutic modalities, yet it is the fruit of those dreadful years of therapy. It is the paradoxical grace, the unexpected gift. It is the entrance to a new life of ordinariness and courtesy. Poet Belloc, in referring to St. Francis, had a short poem. Of courtesy it is much less than courage of heart, of holiness. Yet in my walks it seems to me that the grace of God is in courtesy. The VA may well be achieving its goals in returning a sense of courtesy to the lives of PTS veterans, a courtesy that extends itself to a brotherly love that flows to the sense of agape that heals. Love, said one of the mystics, is nothing else but quenched wrath. Voila.
Thank you. I'd like to ask you all to reflect just a minute on that movie and take your mind back to the sight of that face of that boy and see the pain he suffered.
them in the same scene, look at the faces of the civilians who with disdain regarded this poor helpless boy. I submit that all returning PTSD veterans feel that and look that way and perceive the world as such. I wanted to also mention that there's a false shame. I did what I did because it was my duty. I explained in the interview the exhilaration of taking that enemy's life and the total remorse. Those things are to be hidden from civilians because they're shameful. They aren't. They're facts. They hurt. So it is a false shame. I'm going to ask Mike to speak a little bit more about false shame. What I'd like to do until he returns is shift a little bit and try and tell you what I found that worked for me to get me in control of post-traumatic stress, mine. It was traumatic incident reduction. There's a limited number of research and results books in the back that are free. Please help yourself. It's very enlightening. There's more of the quarterly newsletter, also free. Please take them. The reason for the newsletter is I gave a talk to Tucson area Marine moms, and they said, how do we prepare to help our husbands and our children while they're serving and when they come home? I said, I'll give you girls a talk, and I'll give you a handout, but no questions, please. I did so. The folks at TIR captured it, and it's in the last two pages. It says, know your veteran. It's in the back. Or service person. And then it's a list of suggestions on how to get in touch with them. For therapists who are receiving people that have returned from service, if you put that checklist in the past tense and say, what did you do or have you done, rather than what are you doing, you'll get the start of what I call a narrative, which is the foundation for traumatic incident reduction. And it is basically, and I'll read this so I can go quicker. It's developing a narrative of every traumatic experience you have. Identify every event, add as much detail about every event as you can, each on separate pieces of paper. Then arrange them in chronological order. Then start working on them one at a time, again and again and again, until it's clear in your mind what really happened. What did you forget or think happened that keeps you stuck in it? And with this method, I got through it. So I suggest clinicians who are about to treat the likes of me find out what happened and then work on it one thing at a time until the client says, okay, I'm done. False shame, sir. False shame.
You should see my dining room table at home. One of the reasons it took 7 years, 8 years to finish my degree is that when I was referred to the footnotes, I felt the desire to go to the library and read all those books. That could be called hypervigilance. Academic hypervigilance. It takes on many forms, I'll tell you. That sounds like a joke, doesn't it? I mean, I went to the library. I read everything in the back because I wasn't going to miss any information. Largely because one day in Vietnam, on Bill 10, I didn't read a memo to my troops. And some guys went to the wrong place and they died. So, you see all these bags? I'm never without information. I have information to run the cosmos now. So it's a joke, but it's not such a joke sometimes. Damaged goods, false shame. It has been said that shame is the sharper of the symptoms. An entire cafeteria of emotions are substituted in the game of war shame. Anger and depression, the classic dynamic duo, and false pride are propped up to keep me from feeling the blackness of being bad. The little alter boy. That's a euphemism for indiscriminate killing. I am pretty convinced that macho behavior, as opposed to chivalry, has a deep shame core in its face and is concurrently at the genesis of a bunch of male compulsive behavior that leads to addiction and the salve that numbs. My wife reminds me that since men cannot create or give birth, they create false personas. I just did a sweat lodge up in Payson, and I learned that the sweat lodges started with women first when they were giving birth. The men couldn't believe that they would bleed and stay alive. So I want to know how they did that. So men actually swipe sweat lodges from women. It is from shame that I acquired disassociations and distortions of reality, creating separate parts of my personality to package up and hide the shame. Boy Scout by day, biker by night, super coach, coach of coaches, trainer of coaches, regional manager, vice president of something, anything, to isolate and not feel at all. No connections, no intimacy. Keep moving, work, game rank. Team owner, private investigator, so I can find the metaphorical gooks in the wire, the VC. I will write this world. I will make this world right, like Zorro, alone. In 1972, when I was part of the first experimental encounter group for veterans at the UA Student Health Center, Dennis Erickson, I believe, practices in town now. He was an intern then. We were guinea pigs. I had a visit with Dr. DeArmond, the head of psychiatry. It was the day after our program on Channel 9. This is 1972. Called GI Update with Ben McNitt, who went on to become an AP reporter. It was canceled after only 3 weeks because someone at Davis-Monthan thought we were shaming our veterans by addressing the nightmares of war and its intrusiveness into the daily lives of our young veterans. I was in nursing school at the time. I bought into that BS. That was also the year that our suicide rate began to skyrocket. I bought into that BS and buried the shame for myself and for them for the next 30 years. Retrospectively, it was our nation and its three-legged stool of leadership that was in shame. I was but a stagehand. I believe it was called Peace with Honor that year. In the raw psyche of the combat soldier, it was a wet blanket on a fire of collective shame from which we have yet to exit. Dr. DeArmond said that day, "You look very sad, Mike, and ashamed of something not very clinical, but accurate." I cried. He gave me Valium. I went to the Green Dolphin, one block from my student home at 3 p.m. in the afternoon, and I closed the joint. And I remember the justification that year in a literature class that I took, and I read this poem over and over again. "Oh, many a peer of England brews livelier liquor than the muse, and malt does more than Milton can to justify God's ways to man. Ale, man, ale's the stuff to drink for fellows whom it hurts to think. Look into the pewter pot to see the world as the world's not, and faith is pleasant till it's past. The mischief is that will not last." That's Terence. This is stupid stuff, as the Middle Ages do. These guys all knew something, you know. They used to go back and read all that stuff. And because it's 5-1, I'm just going to knock off the rest of this stuff. But I, you know, I used to read all these mystics, Meister, Eckhart, and all. They're probably a little crazy, a little crazed. But they lived between what Eckhart said, the space between the notes is what makes the music. The soul is between one and two. And between one and two, was my wife. And not enough is being done for this day, you can't just hold groups and have them bitch about their husbands. That doesn't work. They need to have groups and sessions where they can release their own radioactivity. 2003, when I went for the wall, 10-day run back to D.C., West Coast by day, biker by night. And by the time we got to Kansas City, I had met 8 men whose wives had fibromyalgia. That doesn't seem coincidental. This seems like an epidemiological research study for the VA. The women have downloaded everything as they have from the days of the sweat lodge. So, without reading all these other quotes, spirituality to me is a good wife. Amen. And Bill,
yep.
Are you my George?
Let me
give you a good idea for an NCO to let the lieutenant finish, right?
Let me give you 2 quick pieces here. One of them talks about the types of things which trigger episodes for individuals who come back from wars with different experiences that they don't really know how to talk about. It's called Colors of War. The second piece talks about how short a time period it takes to create this type of incident. The incident that is described in this took place in the time that it took to sing the 2 Christmas carols that were involved. The outpost that was described was an outpost in Vietnam, and the incident occurred there as those 2 Christmas carols were done. The first one is Colors of War. What are the colors of war that haunt soldiers' memories? What shades and hues evoke responses in the nightmares of their history? Green is always there in several shades and hues. The color of light through a jungle canopy, and another of wet fatigues. The wet fatigues are colored 2 ways. In days and nights of drenching rain, and tinted with a red rouge linked with cries of pain, as blood and life leaks away on wet green fatigues. Another green is also there, of algae-tinted water that stains even the mud floating in it. The browns of mud and dust grind deep into the soul and skin and turn to rust-red clay when mixed with the soldier's blood. Gold and white are also there from blasts and flashes of light that mark explosions and guns fired and trigger memories of sound and pressure which grip the bodies of them and their friends. The flashes and sounds were the last memory to some. Gashes purple and blue mark wounds and injuries, and looking at the body part can bring back memories of the time and pain which visited there. Are there colors which do not bring back the nightmare memories? Are there some which can be seen which do not speak of war? Perhaps not to those that can remember, to those that did survive with enough emotion left to remember how others died. This next one needs a female voice, and I brought along my accompaniment here.
The spiritual part? Questions?